As we navigate the unfolding realities of the COVID-19 epidemic, many are raising legitimate concerns about how well our kids and their families are dealing with the associated fears and anxieties. Mental health experts are developing models regarding mental health curves once this crisis is over. Youth workers and parents are called and positioned to work together to guide kids through this crisis with knowledge of the truths of the gospel and the hope that is ours in Christ. Join us as we chat with Counselor Julie Lowe about seizing this opportunity to lead our kids to mental and spiritual flourishing over the coming days and weeks on this episode of Youth Culture Matters.
From the Center for Parent Youth Understanding, this is Youth Culture Matters. If you're a parent, youth worker, educator, counselor, grandparent, or anyone else who cares about kids, we're glad you've joined us for this practical, informative, and hope-filled podcast. This is a place where together we talk and think Christianly about the rapidly changing world of today's children, teens, and young adults.
Well, welcome everybody to another episode of Youth Culture Matters, and as we said the last time when we had a conversation on, I believe it was episode 101 with Dr. Ed Welch, it's a different world, and it's different again from the last time we were together as we work to navigate just some of this, the uncertainties that are happening around us. I know the word unprecedented has been used over and over and over again, but I'm not sure. I'm not sure if there's a better one.
Yeah.
Word that we could use right now. So, Jason, how are you guys doing out there on the West Coast? It's calming down out there. You guys started this, right, in the U.S. up in Washington? Not that you started it, but
well, I mean, we were an epicenter, and then it moved east, and we're good. You know what's crazy is you add weather that you can't really predict. In one day we had hail, rain, and snow, and then to add to the mix, we had an earthquake. So, I mean, it's unprecedented, unique, different. It's one of these things that I don't. It's one of these things. As a grandfather, I will be telling my grandchildren, and it will be the. It would like be telling someone I used to walk to school uphill both ways.
Yeah,
and well, it's so different.
Yeah. I had a conversation with my mom about this and had read a book years ago about, I can't remember what it was called, influenza or something, about what happened, I believe, in 1918. And that was really centered, a lot of that was in Philadelphia. And I didn't realize this, but my paternal grandmother actually came down with a flu and survived that and went on to live well over 90 years. So, yeah, this is, it's just kind of a weird, weird time.
It is. It challenges you to examine life, examine yourself. It's caused us to really think about what does it mean to love on our kids, to be a family, to disciple our kids. All of these things are being asked in new and unique ways. And the truth is we have a lot more time to dive into that, which is great.
Yeah. Well, this week, and you and I have talked about this, has been really kind of a crazy week for me. Tuesday morning I woke up and I saw it. I received a text at 1:30 a.m. that a good friend of mine from college who went on to be the chaplain at our college and then do ministry in a variety of places. In fact, I was able to go speak for him in a variety of the places he's been. Dr. Tim Russell had died suddenly from the COVID-19 virus. I had had a conversation with someone just a couple of days before that he'd been taken off a ventilator and was in fact recovering and probably coming home. And I had texted Tim earlier in the week just to let him know, get better, I'm praying for you. So it all became very, very real for me. And then on Tuesday, let's see, it's Thursday while we're recording here. I'm losing track of time. One of my mentors in my first 3 years in ministry, David Ed, who actually is the father of our dear friend Rebecca Ed Sparks, and some of you know her. We've had her on the podcast before.
Yeah.
He passed away. He went to be with Christ. And then yesterday morning, just about 24 hours ago, my dad went from this life into eternal life. So, you know, it's just a navigating this, and God is doing something, and God comes to us in the midst of our suffering and our difficulty, and as C.S. Lewis said, you know, screams at us in our pain. And so this, I don't know about you, but the scriptures over the last few weeks have just come to life for me. It's like springtime in the scriptures, and the idols in my life are being exposed as things that have been important to me have been, and I didn't even know it, have been taken away just because of having to hunker down. So, yeah, there's a lot going on and a lot that people are navigating, and we want to talk about that today. Julie Lowe is with us. Julie, welcome.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah, Julie, I know, is familiar to many of you, and we've loved having her on the podcast. Julie is at the Christian Counseling and Education Foundation, where she's a counselor. She actually works alongside of Ed Welch, who we had on our last episode of the podcast. And Julie has already told me, since we're all, you know, in our own places, except for me, I'm alone in our studio while Chris handles us remotely from home. Julie is at home. How many kids, Julie? Kids, animals, insects? What do you got there?
Currently, we've got five kids, four of which are teenagers. Three dogs, cat, bunny, birds. So I will have my disclaimer that I could be interrupted at any time against my will. So I apologize ahead of time, everyone.
I think we all get that, because I'm sure everyone who's listening is in probably a similar situation and might get interrupted while they're listening. So we get it totally. And Jason, you're the, I mean, yes. I'm the only one where it's quiet, and probably a car will come through the wall or something while I'm in here. So
yeah,
who knows?
You just have to worry about cars. Yeah.
Yeah. But Jason, it's the same thing. And Chris, what were you going to say, Chris? Oh, nothing. I thought he was trying to chime in. Yeah. That's why he's at his at home. So, Julie, we wanted to have you on today because you do a lot of counseling with children, teenagers, and families. Tell us just a little bit about that so that folks who are not familiar with you know exactly what you're doing at CCEF. And then we want to talk about some of these mental health concerns. It seems to be coming up quite a bit, but a little bit about you first.
Sure. I'm on faculty at CCEF and teach. We have a counseling children and teens course that I teach, along with some other courses on churches protecting against abuse and protecting kids and the vulnerable. I developed a play therapy office for CCEF for kids and teens to have resources, and I've done a lot of writing on the subject. And so I would say a good half of my cases are with teenagers and families and kids at large. So I really have a heart for knowing how to love them well, and helping families in particular know how to love their kids well.
So, you know, prior to everything happening with this coronavirus and the kinds of things that we're thinking about now, just paint for us sort of a general, broad, sweeping picture of some of your greatest concerns from what you were seeing in your cases with kids and families in terms of in normal life. What are they what are they trying to navigate now?
Sure. The things that will be obvious to all of you as well, but anxiety has been a rising struggle with young people, as well as issues of social media addiction, and you know, probably what we'll get into later, but what's been my greatest concern is just the pushing out of any adult influence in the lives of young people. And so that's what makes this this time and age actually a very unique opportunity for adults and parents as well, is that they're locked together with their kids, and my fear is they're gonna waste the opportunity they have before them.
Wow. You know, I've been thinking about that, and just a thought on that as you say that. And, you know, a lot of this is getting formed in my mind as we talk and as this whole situation unfolds. But, you know, the complaining that you hear from parents about, boy, I'm cooped up, I can hardly deal with this anymore. What skills and what knowledge, you know, what perspective have we lost that's gotten us to this point where we think that way?
Well, the key word to me is perspective, actually. And I've caught myself as a parent having to think about that too. It's all perspective. I have an opportunity. I can see this as a curse or a blessing right now. And so at least from an adult and a parenting standpoint, I want to see it as an opportunity. That's just there in my face to say, don't just occupy my kids, engage them, engage in relationship with them. And it's going to be an utter temptation for parents to occupy their kids so that they can maintain sanity, so that they can maintain their work. And I totally get it. I'm still working full time. I've got 5 kids. They've got to be schooling at home. Life is very, very complicated. But here's where perspective is so vital, to say, I want to make every day a gift, and I want to make every day a mission to say, Lord, give me ways I can engage my kids well today. So there's going to be a lot of occupying, even as I have to occupy them now as we're talking. But there's also a very sweet opportunity to say, my kids are stuck with me, and I don't want to waste that. I want them to enjoy that. And think about it for a minute. I mean, my biggest fear with social media, and I don't hear many, many people talking about it. They're talking about the addictions, the change in health and brain activity, and all the things that are true about social media for kids and teens, how teen girls are more anxious, more depressed. Yep, all true. But my biggest fear is I watch how it is peers raising peers today.
Yeah.
And it used to be you would come home and parents at least had their kids at home in the evening or on weekends. Now it is kids come home and they go right onto social media, right onto Xbox Live, or right onto their computer, and they're slowly pushing out any adult influence, including parents. The relationship is not happening. So that's just utterly key to me, to say the opportunity now is you can keep letting your kids. I think even more addiction can happen during this pandemic to these issues. Or parents can make an effort, a real concerted effort, to say, I want you. I want relationship with you, and build that connection.
Could you go a step further and even talk about that? Because I love the difference between occupy and engage. And just if a parent is listening, we have youth workers who are parents. I mean, sometimes just even fleshing that out a little bit with regards to what might it look like for a parent to engage, because I know right now, last night we you know, there was the planning for school, and we still have work, and we still have everything else, and we have this great opportunity, but it's so easy to just occupy rather than just make sure we're also engaging. So could you give maybe some pointers or things that you think about when you think of the word engage?
Yeah, when I think engage, I think face-to-face, spending time together. And I talk about this a lot, and we struggle with this a lot because we're a two-parent home who both work full-time and our kids have busy schedules. So I know it is never going to be easy for anybody. It's not easy for us, but I'll sometimes make a list, and my kids are notorious for seeing, here's the 12 things we want to try to do this week, because I'll forget the next day, oh, I had this brilliant idea yesterday of something I could do with them. Painting Easter eggs, going for a hike, we're going to play a board game once a night, we're going to watch the Skit Guys on YouTube and talk about it while I'm making them color adult coloring books. And we have a joke in our home, I call it forced family fun. Because inevitably somebody's complaining about what we're doing, and I, as a parent, could be mad and grumpy about that, or throw my hands up and give up, or I can go, you know what, I know I'm an awful parent, but I love you, and so I'm going to force you to spend time with me. So we're just having some forced family fun today. And my hope is the levity shows, I love you, I want to be with you. And at some point that ends up being said. I know you're grumpy, I know you don't want to sit here and color, but eventually they'll get into watching the Skit Guys or something fun on YouTube as we're doing it. Or we sit around our table and play board games. We have table topics that we use during dinner because we don't bring electronics to the table. We'll pull a card that will ask questions about your favorite house you grew up in, or all kinds of, there's so many ways, so many practical resources you can do that don't require parents to have to think hard. There are apps you can get on your phone that say, here's 20 questions you can ask your teenager or your teenage son. So knowing that we don't have to do that alone, but I'm even willing to just brainstorm in the morning when I wake up and say, what's one thoughtful question I can ask my kids today to get them talking to me? But I will make a list on my phone, or I'll just make a list of here's six different things the kids can do today when they say I'm bored, or when I'm tempted to just let them all go off and watch TV or play the Xbox. Here's three things I want to try to accomplish today. Do you get them all? Not necessarily.
Yeah, Julie, I have a question for you, you know, because we're all here involved in, you know, we stand up, we speak, we've written books, we talk about issues related to kids, and everybody, there's a temptation on the part of many to look at us and say, well, you know, that guy, that gal, she has it all together. Just, would you reassure us right now, do you ever feel like you're close to the edge over the last couple of weeks?
Yeah, I felt stir crazy.
Okay.
Yeah, and every once in a while, I'm like, am I getting depressed? No, I don't really think I'm getting depressed. But, you know, you start to feel, and my guess is a lot of parents feel this way when you walk around the house and it was clean 40 minutes ago, and now the whole place is a disaster again. And I think, how in the world did that happen in 40 minutes or less? So it feels like a never-ending task of keeping up with feeding kids and keeping a house clean. And then, you know, we've got a menagerie of pets. So I'm so glad you said that, Walt, because I regularly feel like I fail at the very things I talk about because there's a standard. Maybe it's a high level of expectation that I want to do this well. And what happens if my kids grow up someday and say, yeah, she didn't do any of that. I feel that conviction that, man, I want to live out well what I'm telling others to do. And it's hard work.
Yeah. You know, Jason, let me share this real quick because
it just hops
on right on the back of what Julie just said, where she talked about her kids growing up. And we can come back and talk about that later because kids, you know, like at CCEF, you know, you do a lot of your work with children and teens, and I know you do work with adults as well, but those who are there who are counseling adults, much of what's heard in counseling sessions are issues rooted in this did or did not happen in my home. And I shared a couple of weeks ago with my own kids, and two of my four have children of their own. They're cooped up. They're trying to work out of their house. They can't get out of the house. One's in a townhouse, so, you know, like, they're like, close. There's just that sense that everybody is close to us. The other lives outside of Philadelphia there, and the homes are close, but they've got to stay in because they have a high-risk child with this, you know, with respiratory issues. And so I said to them, just to encourage you and, you know, push you a little bit, there's a great story I heard years ago that shaped me as a dad. Charles Francis Adams, a statesman, back in the day when there was no television and people would keep journals, adults and kids alike, he was kind of a workaholic, and he took a day off and he took his son fishing. And his journal entry for that day, I think it was an 8 or 9 year old son, his journal entry for that day was, "Took my son fishing today, a day wasted." Yeah. They looked, historians found his son's journal, 8, 9 years old, and on that day, what he wrote was, "Went fishing with my father today, the greatest day of my life."
Oh.
And I just, you know, wow. Kind of makes me, you know, tear up.
Yeah.
Jason.
I think that was exactly the question that I wanted to ask Julie, because something that's been impressed upon me, and I think others have said, and Walt even just hit upon it, is, our children are younger, so your children may remember what you say, but I look at Chris and our kids are similar ages, and we're both laughing because of the mess and the chaos that ensues with everyone being in the same home at the same time, and you can constantly feel like you are failing. But the thing that I have to think about and pray about, and I remind myself, is they're not necessarily going to look back and remember everything that was said or how we necessarily spoke about faith, but they will remember what they felt. They will remember what was impressed upon them. They will remember the moments. And so I don't know if you could speak into that, because I feel that has been really important to us. And I don't know if we're on the right track there or if there's something more to that.
Yeah, absolutely. I've seen quotes along that line too, that they might not remember specifics, but they always remember how people remember how you make them feel. I think that even in counseling, right? Like, I could walk away and there are times I think I've said something incredibly brilliant, and the next time they come in, they don't remember it, and it made no impact on them. And then there are times they come in and they'll say, wow, Julie, this was so great what you said last week. And I think, oh my goodness, I don't even remember saying that, or that seems so inconsequential. But the key is, do they feel loved and understood? And I think that's true with our young people, right? If they feel loved and understood, we win their ear. We win their heart and their attention. And so how we make our kids feel is so, so important. And I think it imitates us being a conduit of God's character when we do that as well.
We need to take a break. Thank you, Julie. And Jason, thanks for that question as well. We're going to come back and continue our conversation about kids and mental health and this coronavirus epidemic. Stick with us. In an effort to help you help the kids you know and love navigate the difficult landscape of the emerging digital frontier to the glory of God, we've launched a digital kids initiative here at CPYU. Thanks to a generous grant from a company called DAS, you can access our digital kids initiative and a growing number of free resources and downloads by visiting the website at digitalkidsinitiative.com. This is one more way that we're helping you lead your kids to live lives where their faith in God is integrated into the growing amount of time they're spending with social media and technology.
Welcome back to Youth Culture Matters, having a great conversation with Julie Lowe. And I want to continue with some of the questions that we were talking about. Walt had earlier asked the question, you know, what is normal that you see when you're doing counseling with youth? I'm actually curious some of the things that you're seeing now. I know that we're really new in this pandemic and we're not really sure what we're going to see, but is there anything that you are observing in the early stages that you would say is similar, different, it's transforming?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it is still new, but one of the things I'm starting to see is the putting kids on social media. And there's a big, when I say social media, I just mean technology and however that unfolds in order to occupy them, keep them happy. And I'll even hear parents argue, well, they need connection. They need social connection. So this is the way they do it. And I think, well, yeah, to some degree. But to some degree, I think we also are perpetuating a real problem as well. And I will gladly be wrong at the end of this. But my fear is kids who already have, I'll just use the word addiction for lack of a better word. I'm not sure I like that much, but it conveys the point, who struggle with these things. When you're in isolation, people look for meaning. They look for escape. They look for what gives them value or comfort. And I think that could perpetuate some problems that already exist, and it could create some new ones. So that would be my concern, that if we don't proactively consider how we're going to engage our kids well, we just let them fall into a narrative of getting your work done and then filling up your time with what makes you happy, I think there's going to be some major issues coming out of this.
Do you think that it's a high, I mean, I kind of know the answer to this, but I am curious, because I hear people say that they're less distracted now than they were prior. But I really wonder if we're replacing our distractions. Like, I really wonder if there is something that's happening where we're just replacing one thing with another. Is that something you're seeing? Is that a possibility?
Yes. Yeah. And I think for adults as well. So even adults I've spoken to.
Absolutely.
And I'll say, how are you spending your time? What keeps you busy? What are you doing? And people are living on Netflix and they're binge watching episodes. Not that that's all bad, but it is a struggle, a perpetuating cycle. And when you think about it, some of the research argues teens especially, but college students, people are going out less. They're socializing less as it is, and they're living through social media. And so now that you're forced in isolation, doesn't it make sense that that is going to be affirmed even more strongly in the lives of individuals who already might be tempted towards that end? And then you add people like us, where busy life makes us get out and have to do things. I'm an introvert by nature. I am a bit of a homebody. Wow, I wonder what this could do to me. Either it'll make me not be a homebody anymore, or it will solidify how much I don't like leaving the house. I'm not sure which, but I do think you're right that it will either create new tendencies or it could affirm tendencies that are already there, and for us to be self-aware of those things and to be very concerned for our kids, because our kids, they're not thinking like adults. They're not thinking the way we should be thinking about this. So we've got to think about those things for them.
Question for you, Julie, related to, you used the word opportunity before, and just to follow up with what Jason was asking there, what would be some preventive steps, some very proactive preventive steps that parents can take right now to limit the more negative effects of this in the near and the near days and weeks ahead, and then also in the future, far down the road?
Well, I think a couple of things, and they're just ideas. Every family is different, so I don't want these to be formulaic at all. But I think coming up with a schedule for our young people is really helpful. And it can be a loosely held schedule. It can be an ever-adapting schedule, but some kind of schedule of routine when they get up in the morning, when they get chores done, when they, how much TV they're allowed to watch, how much time online they're allowed to have. And that you just start keeping those parameters to help maintain something healthy, that you get kids outside in the sunshine or taking walks with you. There comes the forced family fun, right? I've multiple times had my kids go for walks or walk dog walking with me. And by the end of it, it's actually really enjoyable. And it's enjoyable because I have to work hard at making it enjoyable, not because I just force them to get outside. And that's where I think the weight of responsibility falls on us as adults. That not only am I making them do hard things, but I am trying to make it enjoyable for them, and that at the end of it, they can delight in it. And delight in it might be too strong of a word, but it's what I go for when I can.
Yeah, I think kids today are actually experiencing a little bit of, you know, when we talk about, you know, back in the old days when I was a kid. So now they're starting to get that. And I think just in neighborhoods, this is a huge opportunity for us to live out the gospel, to be good neighbors. We have a neighborhood Facebook page, and I know I'm reading that a lot of neighborhoods have that. And people are saying, you know, if you need anything, let us know. We're willing to go get it. We're willing to do this. We're willing to do that. And I noticed the other day just in our neighborhood this, because Jason, I know, Chris, you've heard me lament this. You don't see kids playing outside anymore. Everybody's outside keeping a distance, but families riding bicycles together. And I've been able to meet neighbors that I've seen and maybe I've waved to as I drive by in my car. But now that we're out walking, we get to meet each other. And so there is this sense of recovering what it is we were made for. And my hope would be, especially as you're talking about the screens, Julie, that when we are under the roof and in the house with each other, we are not, as Sherry Turkle says, you know, alone together, but we are together together. And the beauty of this, youth workers know this, because when they ask kids to shut down for a Bible study or a retreat, put the phone aside, there's a little protest. There's a little bit of, you know, I don't know how I'm going to be able to handle this because I've never had to do this before. I've never experienced this. But when I do, I start to realize that I'm living into something that I was made for, and it's good. Like you said, we actually start to enjoy these things. So let me shift gears here and ask a question and just move more into some of what we're hearing in the news. I printed out some stories this morning. These would be more extreme as a result of the coronavirus crisis in terms of mental health. But yesterday, I believe, is when it happened, a man was shot, maybe 2 days ago, a man in New York had been diagnosed with a coronavirus. And he dressed up, went outside with an antique gun and a knife with some ketchup on it, threatened police, and was trying to commit, you know, suicide by cop. So obviously extremely distraught. The German state financial minister, this hit the news a couple of days ago. He killed himself. A government official in Germany killed himself over coronavirus despair. And I know that, you know, certainly it for adults as well, this goes way beyond the issues of am I going to live or die through this, but what about my job? What about my finances? And I know that parents, you know, when you're experiencing that, everybody in the house feels it. That goes viral. So there's that issue. And then a story last week of a teenager in Britain, and I'm sure we're going to hear more of these, unfortunately, a 19-year-old girl who attempted to take her life and eventually died from her attempt. She took her life because she was fearing the mental health impacts of isolation, that she couldn't be with her friends, she couldn't be out there, she was going to be locked up. So let's talk about that. And I know you've hit on some of this and preventing that, but even, you know, as you counsel people, where do we go to find hope? How do we navigate this? How can we gain a perspective on this that would be more redemptive than destructive? I know I'm asking a lot there, so just go ahead.
Yeah, I have several thoughts. You guys can rein me in if if I go off on a rabbit trail. But I think you're right that, so you take somebody who the thought of being isolated is so overwhelming, they become suicidal. And what's complicated about something like that is already where their hope lied, or where their hope was lying, was part of the problem, right? I mean, and that's what we're seeing in our young people, that they will get anxious or depressed, or they'll have huge screaming matches with parents who threaten to take their phones away because their lifeline and identity is wrapped in something that was never meant to satisfy. I mean, that was already the problem. So then you add this on top of it, and it makes perfect sense that people are responding this way. You also tend to see people who have those kind of reactions, especially right now, this early on, stems from anxieties they already probably held. But then the longer this goes, I think it will stem some of that. You have adults who are fearing their jobs, how they're going to pay their bills. And that's where we have, again, a responsibility to protect our kids from our fears and concerns rather than to air them in front of our kids. So I think as a parent, regardless of what my concerns and fears are, I should work really hard to protect my kids from having those weights around their neck as well. And then I'd also say, especially for young people, I don't want to minimize, as concerned as I am about the way peers are raising peers and peers are influencing peers, I don't want to minimize either that I want my kids to be able to engage with their peers and to give them time to do that. And even for us to try to get creative. You know, one of my daughters, you know, texts her friends. I just said the other day, why don't we try to set up a Zoom meeting so you can actually talk with them and have face-to-face contact rather than all of this through text messaging. We have boys who they're totally into role-playing games and card games and board games, and we set up Zoom accounts for them to do that with their friends. It's something productive. It's not just the Xbox game, and it's face-to-face, and they're engaging themselves or getting social interaction. So I don't want to minimize the value of doing that. I just want to, as a parent, be really thoughtful and creative. That's a productive way to engage over social media or electronics. So I think there's twofold what you're saying, Walt. One is those who might tend to struggle with underlying anxieties and issues, now this pandemic just throws that all up in an explosive way. And then you have, the longer this pandemic goes, the greater chance of creating some of these things as well.
And let's talk about that, because some would say, boy, this is a bad thing that this is happening. But is it possible to look at this when it exposes these things? Like I said earlier about, you know, the idols of my life are being exposed. I mean, it's painful, and it's happening fast, and it's right in front of my eyes. I see it. I have to deal with it. As parents, when these things are exposed in our kids, shouldn't we, again, you used the word opportunity, embrace this as a great opportunity to parent them, you know, to their good and God's glory, we could say, through these things. Because if this takes root and grows and we don't address these things, just think about the disaster that adult life will be for this generation.
Mm-hmm.
Talk about that.
Yeah, I think you're right. We always should be mirroring back to our kids. It's not one of the things I often say, it's not just enough that I know my kids well, which I fear parents aren't doing. They're not being experts at knowing their own kids. But I have to help my kids know their own hearts, and I have to mirror back understanding of where they are tempted to have idolatry or find value and identity or escape. And that's revealed. That's revealed. The more they're at home, the more they're looking for ways of coping with their own boredom or their own desires. And so if I'm paying attention, I'm seeing those things, and it gives a unique opportunity to speak into it. And to say things like, hey, buddy, I don't care you're on Xbox, and Xbox is fine, but to want to live on that all day long, or to be mad at me because I'm keeping it from you, what does that say? And I'm just willing to have a conversation about it rather than go in lecture mode or just bring down the hatchet and give consequences. But I want to always be appealing to their heart and say, hey, I'm fine with you doing this, but I'm a little concerned. Why might I be concerned? And they usually shrug, I don't know. And I say, nope. I want you to think about it. Why might I be concerned that you want to do this right now? And I'm putting in their lap. It's another thing I love doing with kids. We get them off the hook by going in lecture mode. And so I'm always saying, what do you think? Or why would I be concerned about why you're doing it? I don't know, because you're a strict mom. No, try again. And I keep giving it back to them, because what I'm forcing them to do is have to think for themselves. It's not me spoon feeding my opinions to them. It's them having to use their own ability to be logical. And I also think it builds relationship too. Mm. And I, like I said before, I like to try to bring humor into it.
That's good.
Well, let me, I don't know if this is taking a step back or not, because I appreciate what we're talking about. But one of the things that I really wonder about is with parents processing this with their kids. You know, Walt just shared a number of stories. I think the conversation my wife and I are having is, how do we, and I've had this with youth pastors too, with youth workers, how do we process this with our youth, with our own kids? How do we speak the reality without adding more anxiety, stress? Because this is something that it's really hard to put into words. I don't know if 9/11 is similar or the same, but there was great pain, there was great hurt, there was separation, but not to the degree that we're seeing today. Like, it almost seems like there was a loss of life and there was something that had occurred, but now we're being separated from relationship. Like, we're not able to be in relationship. All we have is our family unit. So what would you say to a parent or to a youth worker who's helping someone process this? How would you engage in all these many different feelings that they're having? How would you talk honestly about what's occurring?
Yeah. So push back on this, because it probably depends on how kids are already processing it. Some are oblivious, right? Some just know I'm home all the time and I don't have to go to school, and they're happy about that. Some know the gravity of it and they're taking it 10 notches higher. Some are just frustrated because they can't see their friends. So every child and teen responds differently, right? And whether they take the coronavirus seriously or not, they're responding to it based on what it brings out about them being separated, or some of them love being home. So it's hard to answer that, because every child's different. Some kids, and some of my kids, just do really well when we're thoughtfully saying, here's what the coronavirus does. Here's how it's similar to the flu. Here's how it's not. Here's why it's such an epidemic right now. There are other kids with significant anxiety where I think the less they know about what's going on in the media, the better off they are, that their worlds are kept structured, that they're shielded from some of the media that's out there right now. So even as a parent, I'm really careful that every one of my kids processes it differently. You know, one of my kids might think it's no big deal because it just hasn't impacted them personally. And so I might be having a very different conversation saying, well, actually, think how this is a big deal for people who have medical needs, or this is a big deal for the elderly in nursing homes. So I'm actually speaking something very different to one child, while to another, I'm trying to minimize their fears. I'm not sure if that got at what you were asking or not.
Absolutely. I mean, what you're saying is exactly what you said earlier, is that parents need to be the experts of their own kids. And yeah. I think that in some ways, I think youth workers, the longer you get to do life with each of these students. I mean, especially if they've gone 7th through 12th grade, at some point you're going to become not the expert that you would hope a parent would be, but you will become some sort of an expert in the sense that you'll understand. So what you're saying is you got to be the expert of your kids. You got to pay attention to habits, ways they live life, do schedules, hold the gravity of situations. It seems like that's what you're saying, because the depend is really based upon how much you know about them.
Yeah, and let me speak to youth pastors for a minute, because sadly, I think even there are many youth pastors who know far more about young people than the parents do, for multiple different reasons. But that does give a very unique opportunity for youth pastors to be reaching out one-on-one on kids, because when a teenager might not share openly with their parent, if a youth pastor is being intentional about pursuing doing FaceTime or talking with their young people, they're getting to hear and see some of this as well. And it even provides the opportunity for them to give perspective. So when a teenager might not hear it from a parent, they'll hear from a youth pastor, hey, this is a unique opportunity for you to build bridges with your mom or dad, or you have younger siblings, and I know they're a pain in the neck to you, but this is a unique opportunity for you to get out a board game or to play their favorite game with them. And you're looking for ways to encourage relationship. And boy, parents need outside adults helping to speak those truths into their kids' lives as well.
Hey, we need to take a break. We're going to come back and continue to get practical. I want, when we come back, to look more deeply maybe into the scriptures, where can we point families? Where can we point young people? Where can we point ourselves to find the hope that we need in the midst of this coronavirus crisis? So stick with us. We'll be right back. I want to tell you about one of our best-kept resource secrets here at CPYU. For the last 14 years, we've produced a one-minute daily radio spot called Youth Culture Today that's carried on over 800 radio stations in North America, and which can be listened to through our online home at cpyu.org. Recently, we've relaunched, rebooted, and rebranded Youth Culture Today so that it will reach more parents and youth workers with timely and practical tips on how to help kids navigate the challenges and opportunities of living in today's world. We encourage you to visit our homepage at cpyu.org to experience a one-minute daily dose of youth culture that will better prepare you to reach the kids you know and love. Or search for Youth Culture Today on your favorite podcast platform. Youth Culture Today is one more free resource we've created to help and support you as youth workers and parents.
Welcome back to Youth Culture Matters. We're going to continue the conversation we've been having, and I just want to dive into some of the practical. In fact, during the break, Julie, you brought up a few great points that I think would be really helpful for our listeners to hear. So would you just maybe dive into some of that?
Yeah, you were talking about youth workers earlier, and I think one huge place youth workers could be very proactive is when you are aware of kids and teens who are living in an unsafe home. And when I say unsafe, I mean it could be high conflict. I mean it could be potentially abusive. It could be abusive. It could be domestic violence. But where we as adults, counselors, youth workers may be aware that now we have families that are in crisis or who have been in crisis, and now they're all stuck together for prolonged periods of time, it would be a high calling for us to be very thoughtful in reaching into those situations, to reaching out to young people, to checking on them, and to be willing to take risks to do something that feels uncomfortable so that there are eyes on those situations. You know, we serve as foster parents, so we tend to think about these things a lot, and we know that where there's already conflict in the home and now you're put together in a pressure cooker, it could create even more.
That's great. Something that I think a lot about is that this is a great opportunity for youth workers to come alongside parents and to be aware of what's happening in other homes. Would you say not only maybe in areas where there are issues at play inside the home, is it also an opportunity maybe for the youth worker to to if they've never partnered with their parents, to partner with them in this, to kind of walk alongside, to help in ways that maybe they've never done, and this be the moment that spurs that relationship?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, shouldn't we all be thinking about ways to build bridges with parents and families? Because I will often say parents are sometimes part of the problem, but they always need to be part of the solution. So as a youth worker, I would hope I'd always be seeing parents as somebody that I want to be part of the solution, that I'm always, as a counselor, I'm always looking for ways to build bridges between parents and their young people, because my job's to work myself out of a job.
One other question I want to ask before, I know you want to get into some of the biblical wall, but I do think about this both with youth workers and then also with parents, but it's the boundary around social media. Because one of the things that is happening is social media is becoming the platform with which we communicate. I have seen more church services online than ever before. I'm seeing more live feeds than ever before. It's become the way that we engage. And so I'm just curious what you might say, because boundaries are going to look different than now than what we would have said 4 weeks ago. And I think trying to determine what those boundaries are is really difficult. So what might you say would be the best way to be able to lay out a boundary, both as a youth pastor that wants to be able to help their kids get offline, but really you're having to go online to make it all happen right now, and for the parent as well?
Yeah, I mean, one idea that comes to mind right away is just always the two-person rule, which I should say principle. It's better principle, because I am always willing to break that rule if love means I move towards somebody and I'm helping them. So for example, you know, in a normal situation, if a teenager is left at church alone and their parents' car broke down and I am the only one there with a male teenager, then will I offer to take them home? Sure, I will. But I'll probably put their mom on the phone, or put my husband on the phone, or somebody on the phone as we're driving home, so they feel comfortable. It's above board. There's just wisdom issues in saying, if I'm going to be Facebooking a lot or having private conversations one-on-one, do I have my wife in the room listening the whole time, or my husband in the room listening who's out of earshot? Do the parents know I'm Skyping regularly and they're okay with that? Do I always meet with two kids online whenever I can, so there's at least a group of three together? There's lots of creative ways to think about that that says I want to be above reproach. And even if I'm feeling being above reproach, do the teenager and the parent feel comfortable that I am as well?
That is so good. So let's shift into talking a little bit about the biblical, because I mean, I truly believe, you know, we are made for a relationship with our Creator, and the Scriptures are a deep, deep guide for life. And I know that over the course of the last few weeks, as I said earlier, they've become more and more real to me. I mean, everything I'm reading is jumping off the page. It is really something. I don't know how to describe it, but that's happening. And it is so helpful for me to get perspective. You know, I think about our friend Scotty Smith, who always talks about, you know, preaching the gospel to yourself. And I think in the midst of these things, you know, it's kind of like it's like the movie scene where someone is in a dangerous spot and they start to recite the Lord's Prayer or the 23rd Psalm. You know, our lives need to be like that, that we're going to the Scriptures and constantly reminding ourselves of who God is, who we are, that He is our refuge, our strength. And we could just go to numerous scriptures, Genesis to Revelation, that would help us with that. I, this morning, was reading one of the devotional books I used, took me into Isaiah. And in the 43rd chapter, you know, verse 19, it says, "Behold, I am doing a new thing. Now it springs forth. Do you not perceive it? I will make a way in the wilderness and rivers in the desert." And that jumped out at me today as I'm thinking, you know, what is God doing? Where do I need to run? Where do I find my, you know, my foundation? And just to make it even more personal, you know, with the situation with my dad over the last few weeks and watching him, you know, transition from this life into eternal life, and to do that well, the role that the Scriptures played in his life. Help us, and anybody can chime in here, help us to know where to turn, because I don't want us to turn to the wrong place. Charles Taylor, in his book A Secular Age talks about how we live in this imminent frame, that our lives, for the most part, people in our culture don't think beyond the here and now. And we need to move into what he calls the transcendent frame, that there is more to life than the now and what we see and what we can touch at arm's length, that God is at work. So all that to set the table to maybe hear you talk a little bit about that. What would be helpful to parents and to youth workers right now?
I love using the Psalms, and the Lord is our refuge is a great example, a great metaphor. But the Psalms are packed with metaphors of being a high tower, hiding in a shelter of his wing, God as our refuge. And this past year at CCF, our conference was all on anxiety, and I actually did a talk on fears for the future, which was well before all the coronavirus stuff. But I talked similarly about personal experience of going through a house fire and finding out our son was losing his vision and several tragic things that were happening all in a very short period of time in our life. And how I began, I used the word anticipatory anxieties. I began finding things to be fearful of moving forward. I catch myself praying, saying, Lord, please don't let Greg get in a car accident today, my husband. Please don't let something bad happen to the kids. And even how my prayer life was being shaped by anxieties rather than by faith. And inadvertently, the Psalms are great because the Psalms puts out, you know, the world says, think happy thoughts, think only positive things. But Scripture's not afraid of anticipating all the things that might happen. As a matter of fact, Psalms throws them out for us. It says, though your mother and father forsake you, though the mountains fall into sea, though your enemies encamp about you, the Scriptures anticipate every bad thing that could potentially happen and says, although that happens, God is your refuge. He is your very present help in time of trouble. That our hope can only be the presence of God. And I was really convicted that for a period of time, I think I wanted God's promise of protection more than I wanted the promise of his presence. And that's the key for us, that his presence has to be what we long for more than even the promises of his protection in a day like this. Mm.
You remind me there, we do a monthly CPYU parent page. And by the way, I'll mention to folks, if you go to our website, cpyu.org, we've waived the subscription fee. We just want you to be passing this on to parents on a month-to-month basis. You can download this. And for this month, the month of April, obviously, I'm not going to write about, you know, substance abuse. I'm not going to write about kids in media. I'm going to write about the pandemic. And I wrote about pandemic parenting, and the thing that came to mind, and Julie, you brought this up, difficult providences. That God works in our lives, whittling away our dependence on ourselves and on other idols through difficulty. And you mentioned the Psalms as well, and I had just turned here to one of my favorites, you know, Psalm 119, which is really all about God's word. And I have circled some verses here. Verse 50, this is my comfort in my affliction, that your promise gives me life. Then verse 67, before I was afflicted, I went astray, but now I keep your word. And then one of my favorites, which is really not a favorite, because I wish this truth wasn't, I didn't have to go through this, but it is good. It is good for me, the psalmist writes, it is good for me that I was afflicted, that I might learn your statutes. God is really using this to draw people to himself. And we need that. We really need that. Julie, what are some of the things you folks at CCEF are providing for people right now? Are there resources you can point us to? And we'll include on our homepage, cpyu.org, right under the player for this episode, episode 102 of Youth Culture Matters, links to anything Julie mentions here, including to the main site at CCEF.
Yeah, we're developing tons of resources right now on the coronavirus too and anxieties. And so I think you can go on CCF and hashtag that, or on Facebook with CCEF. But I know we're trying to put out tons of free resources. I just saw there's an article I wrote on helping kids with anxieties, and they were putting that out there on Facebook, as well as our October conference was on anxiety, and so they're putting forth some free sessions that we're handing out that you can download and listen to. There's lots and lots of great, almost every other day we're having a blog come out on the different themes and ways people can struggle with it. So very, very similar to what you're doing right now. And they're all there for the taking. So I'd love to see people take opportunity of that. There's videos, YouTube videos, all kinds of things we're talking about.
That's awesome. Hey, let me pull Chris in here real quick. Chris, do you want to mention something to people about what you set up on our site with the special spot there where we're loading that up with resources?
Sure. If you visit our website, our homepage, www.cpyu.org, you'll find an image for a coronavirus kind of resource page. And anything that we're posting on our website, some of that is free resources that we've developed, whether that be a handout, whether it be podcasts like this, radio show episodes, any kind of trend alerts, things like that, but also the things that Julie's talking about, resources from other organizations. We're just trying to compile them all in one place. And there's a good number of things there available for people. So if they visit our website, cpyu.org, look for the coronavirus resource page right there. You can link to it from the homepage. And anything that we're finding helpful for parents and youth workers, we're putting all in that one spot.
So, Jason and Julie, I'm going to give you each an opportunity here. I want you to, Jason, you've been processing this as a dad. You've been processing it as a ministry leader. Julie, you're doing this as a parent, a mom, and an animal and a cricket keeper. I just have to bring that in. I haven't heard the birds this time, which is quite disappointing. Last time people thought you might have been out in the jungle somewhere. But as a mom and as a counselor, here's what I'd like you both to do, and you can think about this, but a sentence or two, a charge, a challenge, perhaps some encouragement first to parents, and then if you would each say something perhaps to youth workers. Let me go to Jason first. I'll put you on the spot, Jason.
Well, the thing that has come to mind is that this is an opportunity for us to see the kingdom at work, that we actually have an opportunity unlike any other that I can ever remember in my over 40 years of life, that this is the one time, the one moment where we get to be a sweet fragrance to our community and to our city and even to our region, it's going to be in the way that we build relationship with other churches, the way we build relationship with other ministries. It's the way we do life within our family, and that probably is the most important thing. The thing that I've realized is so often I can be so focused on every other ministry opportunity that's taking place outside of my home, but the greatest opportunity that I have right now is in my home. And that example that you gave earlier in our episode, Walt, of the two diary entries of the father and the son, I think that our listeners need to pay attention to it, because that to me is really, really important. Because at the end of this, I want my kids' diary entries to be similar. That I want that to be my entry, that was the best day ever, and I want them to also say, that was the best day ever. And I think that we have more opportunity than ever before to make that happen.
Julie.
Yeah, ditto to that. I mean, opportunity is screaming at us right now, right? And we can either take a hold of it and say, Lord, give me perspective. I want to love and engage well during this time. Or I can take just a survival mentality where I just try to cope and get through it. So I really hope parents in particular will ask the Lord to give them a desire for this to be a deeper engagement with their kids, and that they'll look for ways to do that. It's not easy. There's not people like me who it just comes so much easier for. It's work, it's effort, it's getting up in the day saying, how can today be a good day in our home? How can I make an effort to bring something new to light for my kids that is enjoyable? And then for youth workers, wow, you really have an opportunity of checking in on young people and families and encouraging in ways you never have before. It's really easy to sit in youth group and to say, you should want to build bridges with your parents and your siblings, and here's some ideas. And then they go about their merry way and keep living life. But here is a unique opportunity where they actually are in the home. They have no place to go. So for a youth worker speaking into a teen's life, and encouraging some movement towards family is a wonderful, wonderful opportunity as well. Mm.
That's good. I love that from both of you. I'll wrap it up with this. Thinking about this, I don't like what's going on. I don't think any of us like what's going on. And it's, there are times where I feel some fear, and there are times where I feel some anxiety, but there's a part of me that I really believe that in many, many ways I've been well prepared for this based on, relationships I've had in the past, first and foremost in my home growing up, sitting under good teaching, reading good books that take me deeper into who God is and what God's done for us and how God sustains us. Julie, as you say, what we hear in the Psalms, and It's that rootedness, and I'm thinking a lot about that this week, as I think about my dad. And, I want to read a couple of things as we end here. This came yesterday, or a couple of days ago, our friend Kyle Hoffsmith, and we've had Kyle on the podcast. I don't think I mentioned this earlier. I mentioned it in a video we put up on YouTube earlier today. Kyle's a young youth pastor in Ohio, and I just love the way Kyle ministers. He's teaching kids the Bible, and kids are engaging with the Bible. And he tweeted out this week, he said, "Youth pastors, don't underestimate what students can learn during this season. I think we shoot way too low, and I think we disrespect the cognitive and intellectual abilities of our kids to deal with deeper things of the Christian faith and the Christian life. And even if we think they're not there, certainly this situation is creating fertile ground for that to happen." And then the second thing I'll share, which is related, because we want to take kids deep, right, in the home and elsewhere. So yesterday I posted this little thing letting people know about, my dad's passage yesterday from this earthly life and his pilgrimage into life with Christ, the presence of Christ yesterday. And a buddy of mine, Byron Borger, who runs Hearts and Minds Bookstore, wrote this little comment, and it was great. It was very heartfelt, and I love Byron and what he said. And he shared words that our mutual friend Steve Garber, and Steve was in touch with me yesterday as well. He shared something that Steve Garber had said to him years ago, and it was this: "May the things you most deeply know to be true sustain you. May the things you most deeply know to be true sustain you." And then Steve chimed in after that, after Byron posted that, and said, "Yes," as Steve does, "yes, amen." And I'm grateful for the things that I most deeply know to be true, because people poured that into my life. They spoke it and they lived it. And, certainly my dad did that. So this is what will sustain us. So keep that in mind. A challenge to youth workers and parents is go deep. Kids can handle it. Kids need it. And you will equip them for life. So, Julie, thank you. Thanks for what you do. I know we're going to have you back. And who knows how long we're all going to be, I don't mean to laugh, but hunkered down, in our homes and with our families. And, so God bless you with your kids. Thanks for what you're doing and the way you're thinking through this. Thanks for your vulnerability with us today. Jason, I know you're hunkered down out there in Washington. Chris, who knows when I'll see you again? You're scared to come in here. He's working remotely. But thank you so much. A reminder, go to cpyu.org, click on the player for this particular episode of the podcast, and when you scroll down, you'll see links to everything that's been mentioned today, to ccef.org, a great resource I can't recommend enough. And folks, pray for us as we navigate this, and we'll pray for you as well. Thanks so much, and we'll talk to you on the next episode of Youth Culture Matters.
Thanks for joining us for Youth Culture Matters, a podcast from the Center for Parent-Youth Understanding. If you'd like to learn more about today's youth culture, visit our website at cpyu.org. And if you have any questions, comments, or feedback, email us at podcast@cpyu.org.